support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Susan Edwards, Executive Director and CEO of the Frist Art Museum, Nashville, Tennessee.
Have you ever had an assignment quite like the Frist?
Actually, interestingly, I have. I came from another non-collecting institution, so we are a little unusual in that these two institutions were encyclopedic, or at least trying to cover the world. Mm-hmm. Many non-collecting institutions are contemporary art spaces. So
everything rotates in and out.
They come and they go.
Always something fresh.
It's always worth the trip. It's designed so that if you are a member and you come regularly over a five-year period, we've presented all cultures, all time periods, and you have a really good sense of the art of the world.
Do you have lectures and educational component?
Well, interestingly, we were founded with a three-part mission. One is to present the art. The other is to offer education programs. And then the third component, which is really great in a 21st century organization, was to be part of this community. So the art world has really grown towards our original plan in 2001.
One of the things that I've discovered traveling around the country in Hawaii and whatnot is either there's a barrier to entry or there's the opposite, where they make sure they make it. You know, like in Detroit Institute of Art, I think they have Thursday free with your local ID.
Right.
Do you have a program like that to make it accessible to basically everybody?
Well, number one, the main thing is that we are free to everyone 18 and under all the time.
How cool.
So that is, from the beginning, meant to really reach families. So one person pays. We've always kept the price of a ticket at the price of going to a movie, so that it is affordable. But yes, we have free days periodically, and basically if you watch, you can come to see every exhibition in the course of a year at some point, maybe not at your convenience. And of course, everything COVID has changed a lot for us, so
much
of our free admission evenings and offerings have changed a little bit, but you can still get here.
When COVID really first hit, in what ways did you change your model?
Well, initially, in March of 2020, we closed. So we were closed for about 100 days. And then we reopened and went back to business as usual because we didn't know what the world was going to be. And so attendance was very low and revenue was extremely low. So at the end of 2020, we changed things a little bit in that we are open only partially now, Thursday through Sunday, but that's probably about to change again.
And you were doing timed entry to keep people's space?
In the beginning, we spent a lot of time in those 100 days looking at how to come back safely, what cleaning we needed to do. In February of that year, we had switched to hospital-grade cleaning supplies and got on schedules and no-touch options, and you know, all of our doors can be opened touchless. And because this institution has always been very, very conscientious about access for people with disabilities, there are many ways that you could come through without having to touch. So we were a little ahead on that. We obviously required masks, and then once people were vaccinated, we're pleased we don't check for vaccinations. But
where yet now?
We are still open 4 days a week. We still require masks, and that's changed locally. This is a city-owned building, so for a long time you couldn't work or visit a metro-owned building without being covered by mask at all times. That hasn't changed exactly, but the mayor has lifted the mandate or the requirement, but we're still a private institution even though the city owns the building. So we're keeping it until further notice. Most of our members prefer that. Most of our visitors want to know that they're going to be safe inside.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we're lucky that way.
Yeah, so you are open, limited, 4 days a week. What is showing now and what's coming up?
So this is our 20th anniversary, so we actually have a lot going on in this beautiful Art Deco building, which is obviously much older than our 20th anniversary. The building was built in 1934. We have an exhibition of American Art Deco.
Oh, perfect.
So it just really echoes everything that's happening. And we also have an exhibition that addresses the conversion of the building in 2001 from a post office to an art center. So both of those exhibitions sort of celebrate the building, which we're celebrating this year, and republished our book on the conversion. So there's a lot of that. But we also have an exhibition on medieval Bologna, a university city. And Bologna was home of the first university in the Western world, and then other university cities developed afterward, especially in Padua and Paris. But Nashville is a university city. In the 19th century, it was known as the Athens of the South for two reasons. One was because it was the home of the first public schools in the South, and also and especially because it had a number of universities, which colleges and universities, which we still do today. We have 19th century colleges. Fisk University was established for free blacks in the South, and then we have Vanderbilt University, Belmont University, Lipscomb, Aquinas, and many others. There, this is home to 18 university or colleges. We're about to have three medical universities and at least as many law schools, and so it's the home of undergraduate and graduate education.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It creates a real youthful dynamism to the town, doesn't it?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that. We're all very conscious of the 2020 census and the redistricting that's happening because our demographics are, we're having huge spurt in growth in downtown Nashville's 20% increase in the last 10 years.
Wow.
But they're trending very young. So we're attracting a lot of young people, probably because of the creative community and a great place to live, work, and invest.
Yeah.
Play.
It's hard to keep my eyes on you because there's just this drama of seminal Art Deco architecture motifs everywhere you look.
Well, this building is one of the most beautiful examples of American Art Deco interiors. The exterior is referred to as a strip classicism, but the building materials are so exquisite. We're standing here in the grand lobby. Everything that you see is original to this building in 1934.
Wow.
It's sort of massive architectural undertaking of at the time to think that this went up within about 18 months. When
incredible.
You look at the beautiful marble and aluminum flourishes and all the original light fixtures, you and I are standing at a postal table. We've continued to honor the theme of the original use of the building, which fits because it's very democratic use. We all use the post office, and we want this to be available to everyone. When they did the retrofitting, I will point out that this was a coal-burning city and everyone smoked. So the beautiful aluminum stars that you see on the ceiling were so covered over with tar. They were so dark, no one even remembered them.
Wow.
So all of this, when we reopened in 2001, for many people who'd been coming here years and years as the post office, were just dazzled. And we can always tell when someone's coming into the building for the first time because everyone looks up and you can see the vintage light fixtures. The medallions that are embedded into the grill work are the icons of, we have industry, agriculture, science, and education in some of the bays, but at either end you see the transportation that was used for delivering the mail next door to the train station, brought it in by train, but we also have by ship and road and air. So in the 1980s, the main post office moved out to the airport for expediency's sake. Thank goodness these two buildings, the Union Station and the former United States Post Office, have been preserved and are under the guardianship of the metro government.
This is a government building.
It is.
Built in the depths of the Depression. And yet it's like this upscale classic. You know, how do you explain it? Was it WPA part of that
So actually, the money was requisitioned from the federal government during the Hoover administration.
Mm-hmm. That's what I assume.
It took a little while for Nashville to be willing to accept federal support, but once they did and got moving. So it's technically probably not a WPA classically, but obviously the construction occurred during the Roosevelt administration. And Marr and Holman, who were the architects for this building, also were local architects who worked on the Metro Development Housing Agency building, which is in East Nashville. And they actually are the guardians of this building. So we fall under their aegis.
Well, talk to us about your exhibitions. And I understand Buddy was saying earlier that you rotate something new in every 3 months.
We do. So downstairs we have the main Art Deco exhibition, but we always have the presence of contemporary art in the Gordon Contemporary Artist Project Gallery. And right now we have an artist from Johannesburg, Mary Sabande. So that gives us an opportunity to expose our community from the art of the world. But that's current all the time. Mm-hmm. So we can do things that might sort of be a little bit shocking, but after 20 years of history, people kind of go running back to see what's going on there, because it's always something tantalizing. And now the appetite, because we're trending younger in our demographic, people expect that. They want to see that.
And Buddy mentioned that you have upcoming a Cuban contemporary art.
Because we get exhibitions a number of different ways. We worked with the Perez Art Museum in Miami, and we're borrowing from their incredible holdings, Cuban modern and contemporary art. And we expect a lot of those artists to be here. That exhibition will open to the public January 28th, mm-hmm. and some of the artists will be with us. So
oh, cool.
Very exciting.
So the world of curatorial art and the artists, you guys have a whole mind-boggling world of trying to source and understand where things are, where they're coming, where they're going, and that's a whole craft in itself, isn't it?
Well, I think that when you study art history, and this is one of the reasons that it's very important to have a good general education, that you learn that as part of your research in the provenance of where things are and where they've been, mm-hmm. how they've moved, and your network of colleagues, you know what's available for an exhibition. So we get exhibitions several different ways. We either originate them, which you must give scholarship back to the art world to be legitimate players, but so we either originate them, and we originate all the exhibitions of contemporary art in the Gordon Contemporary Artists Project Gallery. But we sometimes are originating exhibitions that are in the main galleries downstairs and the upstairs gallery. So the medieval art of Bologna was organized by one of our curators.
Oh, wow.
So that's her area of specialization.
Mm-hmm. Would something like that then maybe go on and be picked up and travel to another facility?
We originate many exhibitions that do travel. We presented the art of Kara Walker from a major print collection, the Jordan Schnitzer collection and his family foundation collection. And that is an exhibition that's out on tour and will be at about 5 different venues. But medieval Bologna, unfortunately, or fortunately for us, will be at the Frist only. And the reason for that is those works are a bit fragile and they can't travel to many venues. We're very lucky that we've been able to borrow work from all over this country and even from the medieval civic museum in Bologna.
And do you have some exhibitions that stick around in quite a long time that don't rotate out in 3 months?
We haven't for a while. When we did the Nick Cave exhibition, we kept it for a double venue, so it was here for 6 months.
Was that popular demand, or what drives that?
Two things. One was very popular, but we were very committed to his desire to be deeply ingrained in the community and get the community invested by making art and participating, but also we were going to do a major performance, which represented a hefty financial commitment, which we were very pleased to do, but it involved the symphony, the ballet.
Wow.
We had original composers from Nashville. We had dance companies.
That all happened here.
It actually happened at our symphony space, which is the Skirmahorn Symphony Center, and we involved local high school marching bands, and
how cool.
it was phenomenal. But that really was one of those projects that really needed the distance.
Sure. For us. Yeah.
And early on, we had some exhibitions that stayed for about a year when we were just getting started. So you recognize that we opened the same year as 9/11. So we opened, and then we had a tragedy that echoes in many ways what's happened with COVID. And we think we're building back audiences in the same way that we were building audiences in 2001, 2002.
Mm. Isn't that interesting? Once you get the engine fine-tuned, you think you're all good, and then...
Well, I would say in 2019, we were up to around 360,000 visitors a year, and we were open 7 days a week and two evenings, and we weren't bursting at the seams, but we were full, mm-hmm. and we were very busy, and it was just, you know, the reward of 18 years of hard work.
Yep.
So it will come around again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we'll all get more comfortable going. I think some people are more comfortable in a museum space because you can
have that space.
Distance
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
If anyone gets too close, you can walk away.
Yeah, in some ways, it's a metaphor for the human condition. You know, right when you think you have everything going fine, then you get thrown a curveball.
Well, viruses, it's amazing how we can all be taken down by something so microscopic.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back, local community, the universities, and the local artists. What sort of program do you have to showcase, at least periodically, the local scene?
So there are multiple venues for that. Some of the exhibitions that we organize upstairs or downstairs can include local artists. We put local artists in our CAP gallery. We have coming up in conjunction with the Cuban artists, we're showing the art of Lysander Bryant, who's a local artist who's been here for other projects. Where we have the exhibition currently about the renovation of the building, that's the Conte Community Arts Gallery. So we always have a presence in there. It has something to do with Nashville, so we present a lot of local artists. And if your goal is to present the art of the world, that has to include your own community,
sure.
because we're part of the world too. So we keep that in mind, but also we have 60 community partners that we work with, and all the universities.
That's what I was going to interject in the partnership with the university. Does that involve ongoing where they bring art here?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes our involvement with them is more on an advisory level. We have so many scholars who can keep us from misstepping. So typically we will organize an advisory group a year out from a project, because sometimes you can't know everything, and it's good to ask.
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody who...
Kind of a reality check.
Yeah, someone will say, you know, when you're presenting Islamic art, you want to present the secular art. You don't want to present religious art in the context of a secular environment. And so they keep us from saying and doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Working with native cultures, do we know what we're saying and doing? You know, the good intention can fall awry if you don't ask me.
Yeah.
They'll tell you. And also some of those scholars give lectures here and obviously bring their students.
Mm-hmm. You know. That's really cool. Looking forward, what's the most exciting thing on your horizon here?
You know, we are programming out into 2025 right now. So the years ahead will offer the same kind of variety and opportunities to see the art of the world. We tend to hold back until we're under contract with everything.
Mm-hmm. So you live in the future sometimes, right?
Well, we're working on if we do 15 a year and we're 3 years out, we're working on about 45 different exhibitions at any one time.
Wow.
So by the time they open, mm-hmm. you know, we're very much like a little bit in the future, but we still are happy to realize that that's brand new for someone who's coming to visit us.
Okay, and one more. Your life, your journey. You grew up the East Coast.
I'm an Easterner, I guess you would say. Mid-Atlantic mm-hmm. East.
Yeah. So what did you think you were going to do, say, when you were in high school and college? Did you have any clue you'd be here today?
No, I didn't even know this was a possibility. I took one art history course in college and didn't even have the bug immediately. So I went off and did investment banking first and found myself in art museums all the time. Mm-hmm. And went back
in to your time off and just kind of
just every spare moment.
Mental cleansing.
Yeah. Well, it was just fascinated. And so I went back to school and more school and more school and more school and sort of made that commitment. Mm-hmm. And then I needed the credentials. And I've absolutely loved my life in art. It's gratifying on every possible level. And that's one of the things that makes me so passionate about getting young people in here, because I want people to find early, if they can,
right,
what they want to do. It's none of that was wasted. But the other thing is that your mind is so agile, it's good to be in school for what you're going to do for your life as soon as you can identify mm-hmm. it.
And that being said, you bring probably elementary, junior high, high school groups here.
Absolutely.
On field trips all the time.
Yeah, homeschool, private school, public schools, but also, you know, toddlers. Mm-hmm. You're never too young, and we do have the Martin Art Quest here, which is an opportunity for intergenerational learning, and hands-on activities for visitors of all ages.
So you might have grandma with a mom and a kid?
And single parents with their kids, mm-hmm. and they're always accompanied, but it's a great opportunity for kids to experiment with art, and we provide artist quality materials, mm-hmm. so they're going to get a better result than you will with the kind of dime store paintbrushes that I had, and that leads to success. People see that they're very, very talented.
If somebody wanted to learn more about the Frist, where would you direct them?
Oh, please come to our website, www.fristartmuseum.org, where you will find all of our exhibitions and upcoming programs and ways to get involved as well. It also gives you information about safety during COVID. Many of our programs now are available on the website. They're offered on Zoom or webinars, and we've found that our reach has gone around the world with that, sometimes hybrid and sometimes just online.
That's really cool.
Yeah, please visit us in person or online.
And website one more time.
FristArtMuseum.org. And my name is Susan Edwards, and I'm the Executive Director and CEO of the Frist Art Museum in Nashville, Tennessee.
Susan, thank you for sharing. Great day in paradise.
Thank you for being with us and giving us this time.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the heart of Nashville, Tennessee. We'll see you here.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.